This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Here's a headline. Patagonia tells remote employees to relocate or lose their jobs. Tom Gimbel's the job expert and founder of the LaSalle Network, and he joins us to discuss this story and maybe some others. Hi, Tom.
Hey, John Williams. How are you?
Good. Patagonia asked 90 remote workers to either move closer to the outdoor clothing company's 7 hubs or find another job. Business Insider reported earlier this week the 90 customer service employees have been asked to pack their bags and find a new place to live no further than 60 miles from Atlanta, Austin, Chicago, Dallas, Pittsburgh, Reno, or Salt Lake City. What about this, Tom? What's your first reaction to that story?
Well, I think it's interesting that it's Patagonia, which is known to be a little bit more of a liberal culture versus a financial services firm or something like that. So I think that's an interesting concept of it. And secondarily, I believe that, as you and I have talked about, that this was coming, that companies, as they see business not have the hyperbolic growth, they're going to say, hey, an easy way to get some layoffs and trim some headcount is to require people back in the office.
They are going to give people, it sounds like some of the people might have been hired during the pandemic, have been working remotely and far from the headquarters or the hubs, and they want them closer to the offices. They're offering a $4,000 stipend to those who move. I don't know if it's even relevant to say, is this fair or not for the company? If you were hired,
well,
go ahead, Tom.
I think, John, companies actually, let's forget the pandemic for a second. Companies do move their headquarters. Remember when Boeing moved from Seattle to Chicago?
Yeah.
It wasn't all the blue-collar workers, but they moved their, 400 or so staff from Seattle to Chicago. People could come or not come. Companies moving their headquarters, moving offices, closing offices, opening new ones, happens all the time. The difference is it's going from no office to an office. But the idea of a company moving offices and people having to make decisions, this isn't new. And I think that what's going to end up happening, like always, is people turn, kind of a nothing burger into something. And this is companies doing what they feel is best, giving a stipend for people to be able to move. It's not fair for everyone, but it's best for the totality of the organization, is what leadership feels.
Yeah. Elon Musk would say that a lot when he would make decisions or fire people summarily. And he would say, I know that was bad for you. It's good for us. And that's just the way it's going to be. And maybe that's the way it always was. We've gone so far from that groupthink that it's almost a little alarming to hear people say that. But I take your point that the company has to do what's in the company's best interest first, right?
Yeah. We like it when our sports teams cut the bad players. We like it when our colleges fire the bad coaches. We like it when a doctor who isn't performing gets fired. We don't like it when it's us. We don't like it when it's our friends or our family. But at the end of the day, a company is about the being bigger, being greater. The whole is better than the sum of its parts or what have you.
Yeah.
I butchered that, I think. But
I think you're close.
But when we're doing that, that's how you have to look at it. And it might not always be in somebody's best interest, but there really are a bunch of different perspectives, John, because there's the people that can get to an office currently and don't want to, and then there's people that don't live anywhere near it.
Well, that's what this is addressing, too. I mean,
right.
These people, they're not saying you got to be in the office, but you got to be close enough that we could call you in. They got to be 90 minutes from work.
Correct.
Or and so, 60 miles.
Yeah, if you're living in Florida and there isn't an office in Florida, you're not in luck. But I do think the interesting thing is they didn't tell you which office. They gave you an option of 6 offices or 5 offices to be near. I mean, there's a lot of flexibility there that a lot of companies don't have. If you work for a company that let you be remote and they only have one location, you don't have a lot of optionality. At least Patagonia is saying, hey, we got 5 or 6 regional centers. You can be near any of those.
And we'll help you move, yeah.
Yeah, that's a pretty employee-friendly company.
And they're not bad cities. We just read a list of the most livable cities in the world and country, and Atlanta and Chicago and Pittsburgh are on there, and those three are on this list, as well as Austin, Reno, and Salt Lake City. Those aren't all terrible options.
So, not a terrible option at all. I mean, listen, some of them are safer than others, John. Wink, wink, nod, nod.
All right, I'm done with you today, Tom. That's Tom Gimbel, the job expert and founder of the LaSalle Network. Let's talk next week, Mr. Gimbel. Happy 4th of July weekend.
Happy Independence Day, my friend.
Philip Weiss is on the line, the president of SciFarth at Work. And the idea is that when you work, you're supposed to do what the boss asks you to, but not everybody's doing that these days. Is that the story, Philip?
That is the story, and it probably has a little more impact and oomph around July 4th because, you know, we're all celebrating individual freedom, independence, and the like. And what's stumping a lot of executives and managers, John, around this holiday is why some of these new workers, what you might call Gen Z, people in their early to mid-20s, sometimes confuse what is okay, what is truly an individual right outside the workplace with inside the workplace expectations. And it's a product of the generation. It's a product of their really cherishing individual expression, but it's really a challenge for leaders and managers alike.
Give me an example of what you're talking about.
Well, it spans both performance and what you might call polite interactions. And I can give you a couple of examples from companies that came to us after the fact for help on how to best manage it. So there's a Illinois housewares company where a 21-year-old customer service rep, a gentleman will use the name to identify him because of confidentiality, he, while talking to customers, never used their formal name, heard terms like dude, in one case called an older customer, sweet grandma, basically peppered his very informal language. And even though, John, he had attended the company's appropriate communication etiquette training, he felt like that kind of rule was really out of touch. And given his free speech rights, something that we all have outside of work, he felt he should improve on the rules of the workplace. And that led to a lot of customer complaints. We see many examples like that where the newest workers are not accustomed to the traditional rules.
So you're not suggesting that this generation is having trouble doing the work. They're not refusing to, although I've heard examples of that as well, but rather that they're not doing it appropriately.
That's exactly right, John. And the one caveat I would add is while they may have, in fact, an advantage in some cases when it comes to the work because they're willing to take certain risks, to be imaginative, to be extra creative, what we do see is a certain level of what you might call near insubordination. So that is, Jim is really willing in some cases to call out the boss and question their input, guidance, and the orders that they've received. So there's this balance because you want to encourage people to contribute, but they have to also follow the lead when a customer or a project deadline requires it.
So as an example of that, talk about the young lady who would send out maybe inappropriate emojis or messages during a group chat. Do you know the story I'm talking about?
Yeah, exactly. That's from another client. It's a tech company located near Chicago. It was a 22-year-old coding team member, as you mentioned. And whenever the boss would tell his team, here are the goals for the week, none of which were unreasonable because we reviewed them after the fact, her response would be a screaming or a frowning emoji or the like. And when it was verbal input from the boss, she would typically object. And the interesting thing is, from her perspective, she just knew, hey, I'm a human mind. That's what you got to expect when you hire us. The problem was, of course, the boss's credibility was at stake. And she was a probationary employee, never made it to permanent status as a result of this, what you might call true insubordination. And the real cost, John, was the manager in later months was less willing to take input from new employees because now he was gun shy. So you really want to set expectations early in terms of what can and should be welcomed and where the deadlines, rules, and goals should be adhered to.
I could see somebody after some group email goes out from the boss and then you send a crying emoji or a laughing emoji to a colleague, but you accidentally hit reply all. And now you're like, oh, no, that's the last thing I want to have happen. But it sounds like this person, in fact, intended for the boss to see it. What does the boss do when that happens? And what's the appropriate course of action?
Yeah, and you know, you're right in terms of the premise, John, because even if you don't intend to include the boss, sooner or later, if that's your MO, they're going to see it or hear about it. Yeah. So assume it, just assume that you intended it all along. From the boss's perspective, it would have been obviously better when someone first was brought on board if the orientation and training truly deeply dived into these kinds of lines between what is viewed as respectful and what is viewed as creative and how the two can coexist. But when it happens, that requires an intervention, because the problem is if you let it go and figure you'll deal with it later, you feel it's a one-off. Each time an employee does it, it slightly erodes the manager's legitimacy and ultimately their confidence. So you do want to be on top of it. You want to explain the impact on the work group, and you want to ask the employee why they have a concern, because often they'll realize that there's a great rationale behind what you've asked them to do or you've asked them not to do.
Sometimes it's hard to know what you don't know. You know, you're some new hire and you don't realize that, in fact, your devil's advocacy really isn't that helpful right now. You know, you're 22. You just started. Lay low a little while. Pick your lane. Those all sound like pretty easy things to understand or realize, but maybe that doesn't come naturally, particularly to this next generation of workers, huh?
Yeah, that's a really good insight. And what's fascinating, John, is a lot of managers miss the ball because they don't know when to compliment and recognize and balance that with, hey, this went too far. Similarly, new employees who are willing to express themselves should be strategic. They should tell the boss or manager, I really appreciated that point. I really appreciated your edits. In addition, here's my thoughts on how we can better target the messaging or better package the product. So in a way, you're managing the boss by complimenting, but giving them your thoughts as well. So in both directions, you want the dual messaging, because that's how you get buy-in from the other party.
Philip Weiss, the president of SyFarth at Work, SeyFarth, SyFarth at Work. Nice to talk to you, Philip. Happy New Year. Happy Independence Day weekend.
Same to you, John, and thank you.
And if we don't talk before then, Happy New Year. So one of our listeners texted in to say, hey, I'm really enjoying this gentleman's talk about employees and educating them. I presume that was about Philip Weiss, but that could have been Tom Gimbel, too. As a business owner, a small business owner, we have found ourselves having to do a lot more education on basic work ethics, which is really difficult because we're thinking that they're already coming prepared with those traditional work ethics, but they don't. And then we spend extra time having to do that in addition to educating them on what they do for their job and technical aspects of their job, which maybe lends itself to our next conversation with Laura Dribben, who is the founder and CEO of Peritius Consulting. Peritius Consulting. Laura has been on with us before, and Laura, it seems like we're kind of in a lane here on the show talking about employees and their behavior. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, John, for having me. I appreciate it. And by the way, went to your speed jokes at Whiskey Acres. That was a great event. So thanks for that too.
Oh, that's right. We did meet there. That was a fun. It was a beautiful day, and everybody seemed to have a good time. Good eats and good drinks, right?
Absolutely.
Well, thank you for coming to that. And talk to me about behavior in the workplace. What are you noticing?
So I'm going to tell you that I think a lot of the problems that we're seeing today relate to work from home. If you take a look back in 2020, I was talking about the problems of working remote that would bring to both companies and employees, and I keep seeing new issues in my clients and my teams that I believe are related to the problems with remote work. And so in 2020, I was talking about We need to be away from, because of COVID, but what would we do if we kept that? And I was concerned at the time because there are examples out there. IBM and Yahoo used to have a remote work environment pre-COVID, and they came back and said, great productivity, but not a lot of innovation. And I believe that's what we're seeing now in companies. Productivity is up. When people work remote, that has been one of the pluses that people see, but it isn't necessarily bringing a lot of innovation, because that's innovation is something that you have to do with people. It's not something that you typically do on your own.
Right.
And while you can do it on Teams or Zoom, it's not really conducive to generating new ideas.
So what it sounds like you're also saying, though, is not that employees are against doing the work, but rather that they're not able to do the sorts of things the employers would like, collaborate, for instance.
Correct. So that was my 2020 view. And then I think we talked the last time a little bit about, I think it's also, we're seeing a lot of bad behavior, whether that is...
You're talking now.
Talking about now.
Yeah.
I started noticing it at the end of 2021, 2022, where we were seeing a lot of behavior that we hadn't seen before. And understand, my team has always dealt with remote teams. We work with on global projects, so there's always a remote aspect. But there seems to be a difference. And, I listened to Philip, and he, I think part of it might be a lack of training. When you have young people coming in, they haven't experienced a work environment where people work together. They joined the workforce when it was just remote and they were on their own. And you lose the development of these people. And I'm going to pull back a little bit of my history. So there was a book written many years ago called Games My Mother Never Taught Me. And I used to use it as a Bible. And the premise of it was that women at the time, pre-Title IX, did not have the advantage of teamwork when they were growing up. They weren't on sports where you learn to work together. So I felt like it wasn't until I got into the business world where I learned to work in a team. And that is a learned that's a learned event. You have to experience it to understand when do you pipe in, when do you, collaborate. Those are all things that are learned. And we're not, though it's different, I'm not saying it's just women at this point in time, we should be learning our lesson from that, because keeping people separate working from home is counterintuitive to the working together as a team.
Yeah, but I understand you are distinguishing what maybe was early in the pandemic to today, where it's not just that maybe we were losing the art of the job because we weren't collaborating, but rather we're losing the discipline of the job. You're talking about young people who blow off meetings, have poor attitude, sometimes just don't do the assignment they're given. That's the new conundrum for employers, right?
Well, exactly. But I will take it one step further, and that is the bad behavior is not just new people. I'm seeing it in veterans of the workforce.
But I mean, I it's so easy to say, well, that's those young kids. They don't know any better. Or they're so about themselves, they have no sense of place. But you're seeing this in older workers as well, huh?
I am, and I don't believe there's been a lot of write-ups and people are turning to etiquette coaches. And I don't think that this is an etiquette issue. I believe that there's a lack of discipline that has fallen off when you work remote from home. And not only for the individuals acting poorly, but I'm also you know, I've seen examples of managers who typically, when someone behaved badly in the past, you would, as their manager, you would discipline them of some sort. At the beginning, you would say, this is not how you can act, you know, clean up your act, but, you know, a little bit more gently. But my point being is you would address it. And now what you're seeing is the managers are postponing it. Well, I didn't see it, or, you know, I was on, I'm hearing about it from my team, but I heard Philip at the end of his discussion saying it, each episode erodes the culture of the organization, it erodes the team, because if someone on your team is acting poorly, it affects everyone that is interfacing with that individual.
Sure, sure.
So,
Last question for you. So then what advice do you have for managers out there, or for that matter, the employees themselves? But I mean, what are we going to do about this?
Well, if I had my, if I could suggest the most optimal, it would be at least approach a hybrid environment. I think a total work remote is too isolating, and you're seeing a lot of mental health issues. So there's value in not only the work of teams, but the mental health aspect of bringing people together. People need people. Barbara Streisand said it well. The manager side, it's bringing back old techniques. Make sure that you are addressing. Don't procrastinate on addressing bad behavior. I think you have to take it on right away.
That's founder and CEO of Peridius Consulting, Laura Dribben. Laura is a listener to WGN Radio and Speed Jokes and helps businesses manage their folks. Nice to talk to you today, Laura.
Thanks so much, John. It was nice talking to you.
We'll visit again. More business news on the Wintrust Business Lunch with Dave Schwann.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Restaurant burglaries in Chicago are at a record high. The Sun-Times found 635 restaurants were robbed last year, and the city could surpass that this year. The report showed suspects are seldom caught and charged, and Second Ward Alderman Brian Hopkins wants police to have more tools to combat the surge. A merger between two amusement parks you may have enjoyed is being finalized. The deal between Cedar Fair and Six Flags is estimated at $8 billion. Cedar Fair is the parent of Cedar Point in Sandusky, Ohio. Six Flags in Gurnee has been running since 1976. The new company will be headquartered in Sandusky. A July 4th cookout will run more this year. The American Farm Bureau Federation says the average cost of feeding 10 people is just over $71, about $350 more than last year. That's your Wintrust Business Minute. I'm Dave Schwann.
Business of Food Time. Here's Steve Alexander.
Yeah, thank you. And let's talk about the Bee House. No, no, not that Bee House. The Bee House, as in the letter B.
And Continental at one time apparently had more than one, and they just labeled them A, B, C, and D, and on down the line.
And more from him after I thank the Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com for sponsoring us today. There has never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. And there used to be a lot of huge grain silos around Chicago.
There at one time was as many as 14 way back in the 60s.
And perhaps the one most of us know best is the dilapidated Damon silos just off of Stevenson, which ought to be given a SAG-AFTRA card because it stars so often as a crime scene on episodes of Chicago PD.
That was the Sea House and Indiana Co-op, and they were right there alongside the interstate.
Greg White is on the phone.
He used to work for Continental Grain at the Bee House in Chicago, Illinois from 1994 to 1997.
And when he was at the Bee House,
there were four elevators working in Chicago. Two of them were Continental, one was Cargill, and then one was run by the Indiana Co-op.
And the Bee House is in the news today because a deal was made for it to be sold. Growmark, the big farmers co-op in the Midwest, announced it was going to basically trade its ownership in a grain shipping facility in Cahokia, Illinois, with a Chinese company that owns the Bee House. But a couple of downstate lawmakers have thrown a flag on that play. The deal may be in jeopardy, but the Bee House has quite a history going back to 1956.
Yeah, and it was originally built by the Glidden Paint Company because it used to say Glidden on the side of it.
Later, it became a holding place for grain bought and sold by traders at the Chicago Board of Trade.
The game was to sit on grain, keep it in condition, and then execute orders when they came in, whether it be to unload grain or load grain.
And they held a lot of grain.
Oh, they did. Bee House, I want to say, would hold like 7 million bushel of grain at the time.
Grain came into the Bee House by truck, train, barge, and ship and left the same way. But trading rules at the Chicago Board of Trade changed,
which basically killed the grain elevators in Chicago, all except for the Bee House.
Still standing tall on the west bank of the Calumet River at 117th Street.
And it'll stand there for a long time. Those little concrete elevators last forever.
I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
So here's a good idea for the 4th of July or the 5th or the 6th or the 7th. You can enjoy some specials at the patio at the Cafe Brower over by the Lincoln Park Zoo. Brendan Daly is on the line to tell us about that. Brendan, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Hi, John. Thanks so much for having me.
So you're the Vice President of Operations at Lincoln Park Zoo, right?
I am, yeah.
So you're in charge of what, everything, including the cafe?
That's correct. We have almost 50 different buildings and structures. We have, as you know, hundreds of animals. And so my responsibility, my team, makes sure that when guests come through, they have a great experience, that the animals have good habitats and spaces to live in, and then everything runs smoothly. And Cafe Brower is part of Lincoln Park Zoo, and within Cafe Brower is the patio restaurant.
It's really a lovely setting. I would go by there a lot on my ride through the park, on my way to work for that matter. But just describe for people where it is and what that building is like.
Yeah, so the building is just southwest of the zoo. It is on South Pond, which is part of Nature Boardwalk, which we also manage. And, you know, new this year at the patio, we are offering savory small plates and specialty burgers. We also have cocktails, craft beer, and wine. And you mentioned this weekend, we do have some American classics like barbecue ribs, grilled corn on the cob, watermelon mint salad, and red, white, and blueberry parfait.
So those are specials for the 4th, 5th, 6th, and 7th. I won't see the fireworks from there, will I? There's too much of a canopy overhead, right?
Well, you may have to strain your neck, but you could catch them from if they're at Navy Pier this year. But, you know, after you're done dining, Nature Boardwalk is a great place to visit, John. You said you'd gone through yourself. One thing to mention is the People's Gas Education Pavilion, also known as the Honeycomb, the Genie Gang design. We recently finished renovating it, so it's a great space to go with your family, take pictures, or just stroll through the boardwalk and enjoy the nature all around.
The boardwalk, that goes kind of through or kind of over but through the pond, right, or through the water?
Correct. There are sections of it where you're over water, sections where you're over land, and it was really intended to connect visitors with nature that's around. You'll see birds and migratory bird season. We have hundreds of birds come through. There are fish and turtles in the pond. It's just a great way to get up close with nature.
It really is lovely. It will be lost on those of you who don't know to go find it, because going down Lakeshore Drive, you're not going to see it per se, but when you do come upon it, it's just positively tranquil. And now, slow-cooked pork ribs slathered in tangy barbecue sauce with cornbread and coleslaw. One of those all-American favorites on your menu, right?
Exactly, yes.
The red, white, and blueberry parfait, layers of creamy Greek yogurt, strawberries, blueberries, granola, topped with a drizzle of honey. I'm reading for menu. It all sounds good. Do I need to make reservations if I'm going to check this stuff out?
You don't need to make reservations. You can stop by. We are open Monday through Friday, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m., Saturday and Sunday, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. And, you know, we also have on Wednesdays and Thursdays live music from 4 to 6. So it's a great spot, kind of a hidden gem nestled among nature, but steps from the zoo. If you wanted to visit the Lincoln Park Zoo after your meal, you can do that, too.
It's really a nice walk, too, just around there. 4 hours and the full menu, lpzoopatio.org, as in Lincoln Park, lpzoopatio.org. And my understanding is it's first come, first serve. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay, so maybe get there a little bit early, but especially during the 4th of July weekend. But again, it's not like you're just open on the 4th of July. You're open all of the time, but some menu specials for the holiday, huh?
That's right. We are open seasonally at the patio, and then the restaurants inside the zoo are open year-round.
This listener says, John, my husband and I got married, at Cafe Brouwer at the zoo back in 2007. It was magical, and our friends still talk about that day. Do you still do that? Do you still open it up for stuff like that?
Absolutely. We do a number of weddings throughout the year and other private events. Cafe Brouwer itself is closed to the general public, but it is a great space to rent. The Great Hall, which is the main space there, is a beautiful example of prairie-style design and architecture. And then there's terraces on either end that open up to lovely views. If somebody's interested, if your listeners are interested, they can learn more at lpzoo.org/private event.
Brendan Daly is the Vice President of Operations there. Have a great weekend, Brendan.
Thanks, John. Enjoy the holiday. Appreciate it.
Great week and summer, too.